But how about a week from today? Rookies report to one winning drive as training camp is 15 days from starting. Their first game is August the 7th. Less than a month from today, the preseason begins in the National Football League. From USA Today, it's the Ravens Wire. Let's welcome in, as we do every week on the Window Nation guest hotline, he is Kevin Allstriker. Kevin, first of all, a belated happy 4th. How you feeling on this Tuesday morning?
Yeah, belated happy 4th to you. Every day that we get closer to football is a good day. You know, it's been a while. Hopefully, it goes by quickly. been a while since the Ravens have played football.
Yeah, and the last time they played, they lost, which is something that's still bitter. But before we break down the rookie class and get into all of this good stuff, as we're a week away from them reporting, I mean, we look at this team and we've discussed it with you. And I know on the national level, this is a no-excuses season for the Ravens to, at the very least, not get to the Super Bowl, injuries, you know, aside. I mean, the AFC's loaded. We know that. There's a lot of really good teams you have to go through. But if we're sitting here, say, February the 8th, and the Ravens lose in the divisional round with no significant injury, I mean, I don't want to get too far ahead, but we calling this a disappointing season here.
I mean, I think it is Super Bowl or bust. And for the Ravens, I think it's amplified by the fact that their seasons have ended without a Super Bowl in recent seasons. I mean, they've had three awesome, historic-level teams, and, you know, 2019, 2023, 2024, and they don't have a Super Bowl win, let alone a Super Bowl appearance to show for it. So I think at this point, your roster, the way that it is, you know, we've talked about it. I think it is the best roster in the Lamar Jackson era. You know, the expectations, it fits where they are as a team right now. And, you know, I just feel like another early playoff exit or disappointing playoff loss, it's just the same old thing where the narrative about the Ravens right now is, hey, you know, they're a great regular season team. They're good in there. But once you get to the playoffs, you know, just throw them off their game and you'll be able to beat them. So I think that that's a narrative that they have to shake themselves. And hopefully they can do it this year.
Kevin, this team kind of reminds me of 94 49ers when I was there. We had, you know, I mean, our goal was Super Bowl or bust. I mean, we'd been to the championship game three times, you know, and it was all about winning the Super Bowl. And then, you know, we had, and I think the Ravens are in a very similar situation. We had the offensive MVP of the league, Steve Young, and they definitely got a chance to have that too. We had the defensive MVP of the league, Deion Sanders, and I think the Ravens have a chance to have that too, you know, and we had the rookie of the year, you know, in Bryant Young, and I think that the Ravens have a chance to have that too with Malachi Starks, you know, and we had all our coaches were back, you know, so I mean, the Ravens are in that, and we had a rookie kicker too, and the Ravens are in an identical situation, and I agree with Bob. I mean, it's Super Bowl or bust. They have the best roster in the National Football League. Who has the most pressure on them in the Ravens? Is it the offensive coaches, the defensive coaches? Is it a player? Is it the head coach? What do you think?
I think it is John Harbaugh. I think the reason for that is that the Ravens have kind of exhausted every other option here. I mean, they fired their offensive coordinator, I guess parted ways is the term they use, so I'll use that term. They parted ways with Greg Roman and Mike McDonald left, so now you have a second-year defensive coordinator. Lamar Jackson's not going anywhere. I mean, I think that all roads here lead to if there's another disappointing exit. I know that it's not being talked about right now, but I think that that might signal the end for John Harbaugh in Baltimore. Now, I think for John Harbaugh, my stance on John Harbaugh is he's a good coach. Like, you know, I think that if he were to get let go by Baltimore, 27 other teams would line up out the door to go get him because he's that good of a coach. Every coach has their flaws. Harbaugh has them, and, you know, it's a thing. But sometimes a coach just might not be the guy for your team. And I give John Harbaugh a lot of credit. He's transformed himself into a player's coach. You know, everybody wants to play for John Harbaugh, or at least most people do. I know there are maybe a couple names, Renard Pollard being one of them, that might not. But, you know, I think to me, where else do you go with that? I mean, if they lose in the wild card divisional round, what do you do? Do you fire your special teams coordinator? I mean, I don't know what the answer would be, because you're not going to, I don't think you're going to move on from Todd Monken. He's a third-year offensive coordinator. Maybe you do. I don't know. Again, I mentioned Zach Ward's a second-year defensive coordinator. I just feel like, to me, John Harbaugh is the last line here, because they've done everything else and they still have not won a Super Bowl. So it's not about Harbaugh as a coach. It's not about Harbaugh in any way like that. I just think that sometimes, you know, time runs out, and it might be that if the Ravens losing the wild card round again or divisional round again, I don't know how you can run it back, especially when you have so many guys up for extensions and you're probably going to lose a couple of them in the offseason.
Kevin, how do you, the playoff situation again, why do you think it is? What happens to the Ravens going into the playoffs? Because they always beat themselves. And during the season, very rarely they beat themselves. So what is it, pressure? What is it? Because Lamar can't play four good quarters in the playoffs. Is that Todd Monken's fault? That type of thing.
I just think they get in their own heads. And I think that's, that Lamar Jackson does. I think the coaching staff does. I think the defense does. I think everybody does. And the big example, I remember talking about it after the AFC Championship game 2 years ago, is, you have the best rushing team in the NFL. It's been your bread and butter all season. And then you run your running back six times in that game because it goes 7-0 Chiefs, 7-7 tie, 14-7 Chiefs in a matter of minutes. And, you say, oh, man, this is going to be a game that goes 35-32. We got to keep up with Kansas City. When they just should have run the ball more, and they probably win that game if they do. You mentioned Lamar Jackson, and he had two great quarters at the end of that Buffalo game. The fourth quarter for him, that last drive was impeccable. It was perfect for him. But obviously the first half was not, and he's a reason why they fell behind to the point where they needed a game-tying drive in the first place. The defense hasn't forced turnovers. They have a negative 13 turnover differential in the six playoff losses in the Lamar Jackson era. They have 15 offensive turnovers and just two defensive takeaways, which is something that is just, you can't have that both offensively or defensively. Skill position players making mistakes. Zay Flowers having the ball punched out, the taunting penalty in the AFC Championship game. Obviously, Mark Andrews with his fumble and drop in the divisional round last season. It feels like the same story in a different way every single year. And I truly do think it's the mental side of it, where they have enough talent. The roster is there. The coaching staff is there. I think they have everything they need, but yet we're talking about a team that continuously has a disappointing exit. So I think if they have to treat it like the regular season every week in the playoffs, that pressure is there. Every week is a new week. And, it feels like, man, it is like, if you lose, you're done. That is the reality of it. But, I think they just need to focus and say, hey, this is week one. Let's just go out there and play. I know it's hard to do, especially with all the fanfare and, all the storylines leading up to it. But I think the talent is there. It's just a matter of executing.
All right, Kevin, let's, since the rookies are coming in next week from today, how many of the rookies are going to make an impact for the Ravens this year?
Well, I think obviously you got to start with the first two, Malachi Starks and Mike Green. I think both of those guys will have major roles on the team this year. I think it's really important that they get a Nate Wiggins, Roger Rosengarten type impact year out of those guys. I'm not sure Emory Jones is going to play this year. I don't know what the situation is. I would probably lean towards no right now, but I guess we'll see. I think Teddy Buchanan might have a bigger role than some people think he will. I don't know how much the team trusts Trenton Simpson. I'm not really sure they do at this point. There were rumors about C.J. Mosley coming back before he retired and all this stuff. So I think Buchanan, someone, especially with his coverage skills, I think the Ravens need that at that position. And I think he's a nice compliment to Roquan there when they play two inside linebackers. So that'll be a thing. Tyler Loop's going to have to make an impact for him, so I'm going to put him on that list also. And I think LeJonte Wester is a returner. I think that he's going to win that returner job, and I think that he will have an impact for them there. So I would say those, for me, are the ones that will have an impact. Maybe one of the two rookie corners do if there are a bunch of injuries, but obviously, knock on wood, that does not happen. They have a lot of depth there, so I doubt that those two crack the rotation. I'm not even sure both make the roster at this point. So we'll see what happens there. But the ones I listed off there, I think, are the ones that will have an impact.
He's Kevin Allstriker, USA Today, the Ravens Wire. Kevin, we're a week away from rookies reporting what's happening on the website right now.
Yeah, trying to sort through position battles right now. I mean, I know there aren't really a lot of roster spots or starting spots up for grabs right now, but there are a couple of later depth positional battles you can watch, so we're going to dive through all that and also continuing to look at, you know, if the Ravens are going to make any other moves before training camp. Is there an extension on the horizon, a signing? So still storylines, even though we're in the thick of that break period here for the Ravens.
Yes or no question, Bo Braid makes the Ravens.
Yes, 100% yes.
There he goes. Kevin Allstriker. Kevin, appreciate it. Enjoy the rest of your week. We'll talk to you next Tuesday.
Awesome, guys. Thanks so much. Appreciate you. Talk soon.
There's Kevin Allstriker of Bo Braid, of course. Former Maryland Terrapin. When we come back, whip around. A former Oriole made history last night. Well, personal history as he's building a pretty strong Hall of Fame resume, and we'll talk about other things happening in the world of sports, you know, like the Summer League. And a local kid had a good game for the Jazz, or the Grizzlies, rather.
Vinny and Haney's Whip Around.
Every sport.
Every game.
Everything.
Brought to you by Box Hill Pizzeria and Crab Cakes. Best crab cakes in Harford County.
Time for the Whip Around here on this Turn It Up Tuesday. It's Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. Kirk Cousins on the show Quarterback on Netflix was lamenting the fact that he even signed with Atlanta. Sounds like that if he would have known that they would have drafted Michael Penix with the 8th overall pick, he would have never left Minnesota. Would have stayed there, but he did. And he got a lot of money to sign in Atlanta. And then they draft Penix, and I can understand his concern. Like, wait a minute. I've literally never played a snap for you in a regular season game, or any game, for that matter, and you've already drafted my replacement. Cousins going to be 36 years old, tore his Achilles, which cost him a season. A lot of talk that he could be gone in said offseason that is now about to wrap up. But he's still gainfully employed by Atlanta, by Kirk Cousins, in the Wambulance. And was in the ambulance after he tore his Achilles tendon, too.
Hey, Bob, just think about what would have changed in the National Football League. Let's just say Cousins stayed at Minnesota because he knew they were going to draft a quarterback. All right, so, you know, McCarthy gets hurt. J.J. gets hurt, misses the season, you know, and then Cousins would have been the starter, you know, and he goes to Atlanta, and then he gets hurt, and they draft Penix, and then what would have ever happened with Darnold?
Yeah, he would have got millions of bazillions of dollars in Seattle. Yeah. I mean, things happen for a reason, and everything's hindsight 2020. But Penix is the guy. And
that's
a winnable division. New Orleans is probably up against it. But Atlanta, Carolina, who showed a pulse, Bryce Young in particular. And certainly, you look at Tampa, they won back-to-back years. Who knows? I mean, Penix, if he plays well, Atlanta's going to be good. But what does that mean for Kirk Cousins here? When they get to their season opener in the first week of September, is he still going to be on their roster?
Probably. I mean, they've already paid him the money. So it's in their best interest. And Bob, they don't know for sure what Penix is going to be. Say Penix gets hurt, then they got, you know, they've got a veteran guy in there because they've got a whole new defensive coaching staff now. They traded away next year's one to get another one to get two defensive players. So they're expecting to be better. I mean, Tampa offensively is very good.
It's 5880-1057, The Fan, The Whip Around here on this Turn It Up Tuesday. NBA Summer League, Utah beat Memphis 112-111. It really doesn't matter. Cam Spencer, Boys Latin, Loyola. Among other stops, he had 23.6 boards, 3 assists. Seldon Miguel, former Terp, DNP, same Julian Reese with the Lakers a couple of nights ago, even though he did get in the stat sheet. Derek Queen, New Orleans, plays in Vegas coming up on Thursday. But, I mean, if you're not playing in summer league games, getting DNPs probably doesn't bode well. I mean, and you certainly appreciate the fact that he got himself onto a roster. But Cam Spencer, man, he bounced around Rutgers to UConn and all that good stuff. So good for him doing his thing this day in Orioles history. Well, let's do Wimbledon first. Today's the 8th of July since we're watching tennis live and in person. 1978, Bjorn Borg beat Jimmy Connors in straight sets, 6-2, 6-2, 6-3. That was his third straight of would-be five Wimbledon championships. Or Bjorn Borg won all the majors except for the U.S. Open. Could never win the U.S. Open. And then, let's just say July 8th, not a good day for Jimmy Connors at Wimbledon. 1984, John McEnroe said, get out of here in straight sets, 6-1, 6-1, 6-2. As John McEnroe, then at the height of his powers, dismisses old Connors. But to Jimmy's credit, Jimbo, he did win Wimbledon twice himself. So 74 and 82, lost a few times, lost more than he won. I mean, Arthur Ashe beat him 50 years ago, one of the great. I remember watching that as a young kid. But Jimmy Connors, July 8th, not a good day for him on the grass at Wimbledon. This day in Orioles history, 2 years ago at Minnesota, Adam Frazier. Two ribbies, Gunner, Taters, Moo Man, Urias all drove in runs. Tyler Wells, remember how good he was for the first 4 months of the 2023 season as a starter? He went six strong, picked up his seventh win, 6-2. Orioles with a victory. And then last night in Major League Baseball, bringing back current, a guy that the Orioles drafted highly, got his first Major League hit, August 9th, 2012, which was a triple, by the way. But Manuel Machado hit a pretty significant career milestone.
Left side off the glove of Perdomo. Hit number 2,000 of his career for Manny Machado as he continues to build on his resume towards the Hall.
That's Padres TV. Manny Machado last night, 3-for-5 with a ribby. Padres lost. But he got his 2,000th career hit, tacked on another one, 2001. So if you look at his career numbers, he has 2,001 hits, 357 home runs, over 1,000 ribbies, over 1,100 ribbies, over 1,000 runs scored. His OPS is 827 for his career. He's got a couple gold gloves, got the platinum glove. I mean, even Brooks Robinson himself. Watching 2013 Manny around that hot corner is like, I could never do what this guy's doing. But Manny Machado, I thought he was an Oriole for life. And we'll talk to Rockabacco about this in a couple minutes. Obviously, he wasn't. He's actually been gone longer than he was here. He got traded away 7 years ago. 2018, went to the Dodgers. They went to the World Series. Kind of loafed on a ball that hit the wall. You know what I mean? Because he thought it was a home run. Then he went to San Diego, and they've been kind of contenders pretty much for the duration of his career. But Manny Machado, I'm sure there'll be some sort of, or I don't know if he gets his number retired or anything like that, but he'll be in the Orioles Hall of Fame.
Will he be in the MLB Hall of Fame?
That's what we're talking about here. Yeah. He's putting together that sort of resume. He'll get to 400 homers. I mean, Padres can add a World Series ring to the equation. Who knows? But Manny Machado, he was drafted to be this guy. Unfortunately, most of it's been done elsewhere. But Rockabacco, talk to him about what's going on with the current day Orioles from MassinSports.com. Six games before the break. Got the Mets coming to town. And then the Marlins. Kyle Stowers made the All-Star team. But Trevor Rogers is their best pitcher. So it's a trade that's helped everybody, right? Then a funhouse trip with Mr. Electricity, Nolan McGraw. And then news from the Nets, top of the hour. We're a week away from rookies reporting to Owings Mills. We're coming up on the trade deadline in another few weeks. Got the All-Star break next week. Got Wimbledon going on. What in the hell's going on? Well, a lot. And we're talking about it here on The Fan. From MassinSports.com, he's on the Window Nation guest hotline. Let's welcome back Rockabacco. Rock, what is up?
How you doing? Just watching a little Wimbledon here, getting caught up on who the ones and twos are. I mean, I've fallen so far off. I didn't even know there was a guy named Sinner who ends up being number one in the world. I mean, I didn't even know he existed.
Well, so. I didn't know because he won yesterday because the guy tapped out who has quit. I can't remember the guy's name. I apologize. But seven times. The guy that
tore his pec or
he's
something.
He's like, I'm out. I'm tapping out. So Sinner, he advances in. But, Rock, we were just talking about Manny Machado. 2,001 hits, OPS career, 850, 350 basically, home runs, gold gloves, platinum gloves, and all that good stuff. Take us back to the good old days of Manny getting called up in August of 12 and how he solidified that team's defense at third base, contributed some big hits, hit a home run in the playoffs against the Yankees, and now where he is today.
Yeah, it was a really unique promotion, and I don't think you'll see it very often. I can't see Mike Elias and his people doing something like this. I mean, he was in Double A, and he was a shortstop, and they had Wilson Benemit and, I think, Mark Reynolds playing third base, and it wasn't going well. So they stuck Bobby Dickerson, the third base coach, also one of the best infield instructors ever, to go to Bowie when nobody was watching and work with him a little bit at third base, and they called him up. I mean, it was – and this isn't a team that's, you know, trying to make the playoffs. So, I mean, it was a bold move, but it showed how confident they were in him, his talent, being able to handle it. He ended up being, you know, such a good fielder at third. It was became the big debate of why would you even move him to short. And they even told him, look, we don't care if you hit or not. We just need you to field the ball. Play good defense at third, and you'll stay in the lineup, and everything else will be fine. And, of course, he ended up being an outstanding hitter as well. But it showed a tremendous amount of confidence in him at that age, new position, coming up from Double A. And obviously the rest is history. And he was a guy who obviously wanted to play short. He had so much respect for J.J. Hardy. He's like, hey, I'll wait until J.J.'s gone, and then maybe I can play short. He never complained or pushed for it because he knew Hardy was the man at shortstop.
Yeah, he had the gold gloves to back that up. But let's talk about this year's shortstop, Gunnar Henderson. I mean, you look at the numbers, they're not what they were a year ago at this time when he was starting for the American League, but they're still not bad. Still leads the team in hits and all of these fun things. But defensively, Rock, we talk about the eyeball test, and he hits the eye. He got cannon arms, athletic, makes a spectacular play. But the stats, the analytics say, no. He is not that great. Matter of fact, he's negative in the nerd stats. Sorry, all nerds out there. But how are we grading him defensively as a shortstop outside of that eyeball test stuff that looks so impressive when he's on point?
Well, I should start out by saying that I'm not a huge fan of all the defensive metrics. I mean, they crushed Cedric Mullins all the time for not getting the good jump, taking the poor route. And the guy's still making all these spectacular plays in center, but the metrics hate him. And with Gunnar, you know, he's gotten much better, I think, after a rough early stretch again. I'm seeing making plays now, you know, fielding balls on the run, throwing across his body, making it look routine when they're not routine plays. And I'm like, okay, that's Gunnar. But they just go down as a 6-3 in your scorebook. But they're far from easy plays. I think he's done much better. But there was a lot of inconsistency with, you know, with the throwing. I mean, he was just, you know, off the mark. And, you know, that you can see. We don't need the defensive metrics to see that the guy's not throwing accurately or he's, you know, mishandled some balls. But I think he's better than those numbers show. And anybody in the organization will tell you the same. And I certainly think from as much as I've seen him now, he's been much better than he was earlier.
Rockabacco, MassinSports.com, Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. Orioles Mets start a 3-game set tonight, 6:35, maybe. Might start a little bit later. Look at your Doppler weather to get the idea there. If I'd have said to you, Rock, May 25th, that as we sit 6 games before the All-Star break, that Charlie Morton, Trevor Rogers will be the Orioles' two best starting pitchers, you would have said what to me?
I would have told you to stop drinking that early in the morning.
Right.
What I would have thought. I mean, who knew? You know, and I give Rogers credit because I'm sure, you know, at the time he was not happy with getting sent down last year after 4 starts, knowing what the team gave up. I mean, 2 prospects, and the guy's not living in a bubble. He knows what fans are saying, and the criticism that the front office was taking for making that trade, people judge it pretty quick. It's hard to judge a trade that quickly. And they were just crushing the Orioles for doing it. So he, you know, he's having problems with his mechanics. And then obviously the confidence starts to erode. And he admits later that was the best thing that happened, even though he wasn't thrilled with it. They sent him down, didn't bring him back up, worked on things over the winter as well. Now, of course, he shows up in spring training with an injury, and there was no way he was going to make the club after that. But, you know, he's worked his way back. And the guy can pitch. I mean, he was an all-star. I think he was like runner-up for Rookie of the Year in the National League. It's just, you know, he went to this decline, and again, a lot of it was mechanical, and the Orioles were working with him. But, you know, it had to get in his head after a while. He's not having success, and he knows what's happening with the guys that were traded and the heat that, you know, the team was taking. And I think he put a lot of pressure on himself. And with Morton, it was just curious. I mean, his velocity was actually up at the curveball, which is one of the best pitches in all of baseball. Like any pitcher, any pitch, the Charlie Morton curveball ranks among the best, and it wasn't working for him at all, and he had no idea why. And, you know, if he was 28, 30, that's one thing. When you're in your 40s, people think, okay, this guy's washed. He never thought he was, but he was thinking, how much longer can I go out there, hurt my team, burn up the bullpen with short starts, even if I think I can still get out at this level. And now he's turned it around. So that's what you said is obviously it says a lot about those two guys. It also says a lot about the rest of the starting pitchers. The guys are either hurt or underperforming. Sugano, I went from thinking he could be an all-star to thinking he's hurting his trade value. I mean, that's how quickly things can turn around here.
Hey, Rock, it seemed like Holiday kind of took off when Masolino said, he's my starter, you know, every day. He's my leadoff hitter every day. You know, he's in the lineup every day. Would Hyde have done that?
I think so. He was playing most of the days toward the end with Hyde as well, and he was leading him off. Maybe not every single game, but quite a bit. But, you know, you'd be also you have to perform to the point where you're able to stay in that role and play every day and be the leadoff guy, and he's done that. And I think with his talent, it was going to happen anyway, but I'm sure it helped to hear Mancini say that. He was like, he could be the leadoff hitter for at least the next 5 years. And I was like, whoa, we're really looking ahead here. But, I mean, he's got that kind of ability, and it's a, you know, he's hitting lefties as well. And, you know, since spring training, they were preaching to him, don't worry about home runs, hit line drives. Aim at left center, right center, use your speed, just get on base and be disruptive. And that's what he's doing now, but it's not like they just came up with that idea under Mancini. I mean, they were talking about that back in spring training, and he's got natural power. He's hitting a lot of balls to the opposite field. He's homering into the bullpen as a left-handed hitter. I mean, it's going to happen without trying, and he sees that, agrees. Like, I just go up there trying to hit a line drive, and then what happens, happens. But that's just how talented he is. And again, people that judge a little too quickly, you know, I know on my blog, I had readers saying the guy was a bust and send him down and maybe trade him. And I'm like, oh, let's be a little more patient with the 20, 21-year-old kid here who was the first overall pick and the top prospect in baseball.
Rock and Bocco, MassinSports.com. Rock, as always, appreciate the time. Enjoy the Mets this week and the Marlins. Say hi to Kyle Stowers for us, and we'll talk to you soon.
Don't forget Connor Norby.
Connor Norby, no doubt about it.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Rock.
All right, here's Rock and Bocco. We'll come back, reset for you. Talk to Nolan McGraw as we squeeze a funhouse in, maybe. If not, we'll get it next hour. Got news from the Nest coming up top of the hour. Revisit the Ravens a week from rookies reporting to training camp 2025. Vets are coming in. No excuses year for the Ravens. Super Bowl or bust. I think we're all on board that train. Orioles taking on the Mets tonight. Got news for the Nest. Top of the hour. Going to do draft profiles. We talked earlier about Rosengarten and Paalele. Vinny's going to look back at them as they were coming into the National Football League. Now the starting right side of the Ravens O-line. Buyer sell was to turn it up Tuesday money. And then Tim Britton. Talk about the Mets. He's with the Athletic. They've struggled on the road. They've struggled offensively. I mean, I know that they got a bunch of dough invested in the team, and they're still upside for sure. But why the offensive struggles? And injuries are always a part of the equation. Just look at the Orioles. We'll get into that and more later on in the program. NFL Lunch Style. Will Graves. Talk about the Steelers from the Associated Press as they embark on yet another training camp with some fancy names at positions of need, but still looking for their first playoff win in almost a decade. Let's bring in Nolan McGraw. Quick draw, how you feeling?
Doing pretty good today. Got my eye on Brandon Young, tonight's starter for the Orioles. Don't really know what to make of him. Be honest, coming into this year, not on my radar at all. Cade Povich, you know, who's the other? Chase McDermott. Probably a little bit more higher up on the list of young pitchers that you viewed as a potential piece for the future for this team. But then all of a sudden, Brandon Young asked to make a spot start in April, goes okay, not great, kind of at the time what they needed to beat the Reds in a shootout game. Didn't know if you see him again. Well, he's made four starts at this point, can't go deep. And if you're looking on the surface, you might say, well, hey, I mean, 61 pitches to get through four innings. Why is he getting yanked? What's the deal here? Just way too much traffic on the base pass. I mean, this guy can't help himself, but I feel like he's close. And he's not pitching the Orioles out of games, which is maybe the biggest compliment you can give him right now. Okay. It's not three or four innings, six, seven runs where, all right, the game's over already. Let's just pack it up and come back tomorrow. Usually, they might even have the lead at the time he's leaving some of these games. Just needs to go a little bit deeper. So I don't know what's in the cards for him in terms of the rest of this year. Once guys get healthy, probably the first man to get bounced. What's next for him in his career in general? But just going from being completely off the radar to now a name that we're talking about, it could end up being a decent enough year for him when it's all said and done.
Physical resemblance aside, looks like Mike Bauman a little bit in regards. He's got great stuff. The command is a little shaky. That's why you talk about the traffic, the pitch counts elevated. I guess you look at the 61 pitches. I don't have that box score in front of me. I'm sure a lot of them were balls. You know what I mean? So if he could ever harness the control with that high 90s, you know, velo that he brings to the equation, there'll be a role for him. But he's here because Chase McDermott got hurt early. Cade Povich is hurt now. Albert Suarez, we keep forgetting about him and how valuable he was to last year's playoff team. He hasn't pitched yet. And to your point, Nolan, when some of these guys do return, and who knows about Grayson? I know he's saying all the right things. Bradish seems to be trending in a positive direction. Could see Wells maybe in September. Maybe Suarez too. I just think a lot of this is lining up well for what they're going to look like next year in regards to throwing baseballs. Mike Elias is going to have to add some reinforcements to the rotation for sure. But Brandon Young looks like a guy, like you said, unless you follow the Orioles minor leagues closely, really know much about him at all. Look at this Gillis guy. He's pitching in the futures game. But Braxton Bragg looks like he's now a top 10 prospect that we never talked about until 2 months ago. You know, sometimes it all comes together for you. And it did for Brandon Young. He was pitching really well down on the farm, which got the attention of the Orioles. And now he's got to match Clay Holmes. And Clay Holmes is a guy that he was the Kimbrel of the Yankees last year as their closer. He's the guy that being cursed at, if memory serves, in the rain. That Clay Holmes?
Could be.
Yeah, what, he was the closer for New York? By the way, they just lost Clark Schmidt for the year, the Yankees. Right. You talk about injuries. I mean,
well, they're buying now.
Yeah.
I mean, they were buying before, but they're buying now.
But Brandon Young, long-winded way to talk about him. Yeah, let's see what he can do.
Well, there's something there.
I see a slappy. Yeah. I see a guy with potential here.
And when you made that Mike Bauman comparison, I hadn't really even thought about him in a potential bullpen role. But, I mean, that's an option that's on the table for sure. Obviously, when we get to the offseason, we talk about names that are in play for the starting rotation. Well, I don't want to get to a point next spring where I'm really leaning on a Brandon Young to say, hey, you're the fifth guy in the rotation. That means the Orioles probably didn't do anything, or there were 3-4 injuries again. Either way, it's a bad outcome. But they are going to need help in the bullpen. We're expecting a good bit of turnover there. Guys like Soto, Dominguez, probably on their way out. Mike Elias has had a knack for finding decent diamonds in the rough there over the years.
Oh, Coulomb, C&L Perez.
So
Cano.
You maybe expect one or two of those, but hey, why not a Brandon Young?
Soto, by the way, in the game against the Braves on Sunday, big at bat when he got Olson to kill that uprising. And then Dominguez gave up the home run, but, you know, got himself a save. Orioles swept the series. We're not going to sit here and whine about that. Well, maybe we can. Who knows? News for the Nats coming up next. Going to break down two. The Ravens' right side of the offensive line. They were homegrown draft picks. Could they be here for years? Does one outplay his contract to the point where the Ravens can't afford him? You know, because that center thing they're going to have to deal with as well financially. Buy or sell, speaking of money, we'll count that hopefully at 12:15. And we'll talk about those Mets with Tim Britton from The Athletic. They're flip-flopping with the Phillies. Right now, it's a two-team race in the NL East. It's the Braves, the Marlins, and the Nats. They've kind of, even though Miami's playing better, falling off by the wayside. Who's going to wind up getting over the hump? And what does New York need at the trade deadline?